Hi, my name is Rivka Sidorsky. Thank you for asking me to share some information with you on dealing with intimacy and sexuality, I guess, during coronavirus. And I guess these are some very general questions, not only related to right now. So it sounds like everybody submitted questions, and I have a very, very long list of questions. I'm going to try to answer them as best as I can. If I don't answer your question, well enough, or you need more time or more explanation, feel free to contact me. My contact information is my email address is Rivka, Rivka, at rivkasidorsky.com, and my website is www.rivkasidorsky.com, RivkaSidorsky.com. Just a little bit of information about myself. I am a licensed clinical social worker and an ASEX certified sex therapist. And I am also a board certified supervisor. I have a group private practice in Silver Spring and a second location in New Jersey. Okay, so the first topic is on what is sex therapy. So I'd be happy to talk a little bit more about what that is. So a sex therapist is very similar to an individual or couples therapist. We are all regular therapists first. So, you can't become a sex therapist without being a therapist first. So everybody has a background in usually individual and couples therapy. And then you take extra training and courses on helping individuals and couples with their sexual issues. So, sexual issues are not only relationship issues. What I mean by that is that you can have a great marriage outside the bedroom, and you can still have problems with your sex life. And on the other hand, you can also have difficulty connecting sexually if you have a difficult relationship outside of the bedroom. So it is definitely not true that sexual issues are a manifestation of problems outside of the bedroom. Sometimes the relationship and the communication can be great, and you can still have plenty of sexual issues. So let's see. The questions read, what is the purpose or function of a sex therapist? How do I or my spouse know if we should see one together or individually? I would say it's like 50-50, 50%, I guess. I mean, half the people maybe come alone, half the people maybe come together. I think it really depends on, I think it depends on how much of the problem you feel like is truly, kind of relational based as opposed to sort of individual based. For example, if you individually have some history of trauma or a lot of anxiety, it could be that talking to a sex therapist alone might be very helpful if you know that a lot of what's happening is issues that you are dealing with. On the other hand, if you feel like they're so interconnected to like the way that you guys interact or relationship, then maybe it's even more so important that you go together to sex therapy. But it really can be either. Okay, what are some warning signs that would indicate the need to see a sex therapist? So, I think that, there's an old adage that if sex is not a problem in the relationship, it's like 20% of the, it feels like 20% of the relationship. And if sex is a big problem in the relationship, it feels like 80% of the relationship. So what we often see is that if it is, we often see that it becomes a big problem and it feels like 80%, or it feels like this very big problem. So if you feel like it's become, a large part of your marriage, then it's probably a pretty big problem. Okay. What are some most common issues and problems that you work with? So, I personally work a lot with sexual aversion, painful sex, unconsummated marriage, sexual anxiety, those type of things. And therapists in general, sex therapists in general, work with all sorts of things like trauma and differences in desire and low libido and premature ejaculation, performance anxiety, all sorts of things. Okay, somebody's asking, what is a sex therapist for exactly? We've gotten mixed messages, either for technical, biological, sexual issues, or emotional issues. Certainly emotional issues. Of definitely, it is. It's all wrapped up together. We can be very helpful with techniques and tools, but it is a therapy. It is not a. It's not somebody like you don't come to a sex therapist for like tips or advice. So it's not like tips or advice. It's really, it is really therapy. So it is, issues about, in emotional intimacy or physical intimacy or anxieties or relationship conflicts. And then we do certainly help with tools and techniques, but it's not just purely tips or something like that. Okay. So talking the sec that's the first section. The second section is talking with partners about sex. Oh, I'll give you an outline since I'm not sure if you how what you have. So the first topic was sex therapy. We just covered that. The second topic is talking with partners about sex. The third topic is planning and making it happen. The fourth topic is prescribed times for intimacy. The fifth is building desire. The sixth is spicing things up. Seven is female issues. Eight is male issues. Nine is practical issues. And 10 is dating versus marriage. 11 is other questions. Okay, so I'll try to do the best I can. The second topic, talking with partners about sex. How does one sensitively approach a spouse that's less interested in the importance of this topic and it causes it to be unpleasant for the lack from their lack of interest? I think that it is a very touchy and vulnerable topic for most people. So I try to keep things, if you can, very positive and careful with your language. So for example, I wouldn't say like, why don't you want to have sex with me as much as I want to have sex with you? I would say, I wanted to talk to you about something, that's difficult for us to talk about, and I know how hard it is to talk about these difficult subjects. And sometimes I feel a little bit rejected when I kind of initiate and you don't seem very receptive. I'm wondering if we can talk about that a little bit more. Something like a lot softer of language and more positive and a softer approach, and also definitely not during sex, before sex, after sex, like nothing like surrounding the sex. So I think it should really be outside of that moment. How do you deal with a mismatch of in ideas about sex? So this person's saying, my spouse is what I'd call pretty vanilla, and I really enjoy more playful sexual relationship. So I do get what this person's saying. This person is sort of saying, I am more ambitious or free or want to go outside of our boundaries or comfort zones, not boundary, comfort zones, and take some leaps together. And I think the person is saying that their partner is somewhat trepid or shy or vanilla. So what I think about that situation is just that you, if you could get your partner to feel more comfortable and confident by using a lot of like praise and like boosting their confidence and talking like that, I think then you would be able to get them to step outside their comfort zone a little bit. So they are, they're not as comfortable doing some of the things that you are interested in, I think, because they're feeling like they'd rather stick with what they know. So I think if you can get them feeling more confident and comfortable and like feeling really confident and comfortable and positive, I think then you could like encourage them to step outside their box a little. The next question is, although I don't have a strong libido, I strongly believe that regular intimacy is foundational to marriage. I'm diligent about trying to be available and making sure we're together, even when I'm not in the mood. My partner's libido waxes and wanes, but we both agree that we never regret being together. And so this person is wondering if it's good to initiate intimacy like that. Okay. So let me tell you what I think is a healthy approach and then what may be not healthy. Okay. So men have more spontaneous sexual desire than women, much more, which means that without a like a stimulus, like a thought, without a touch or something happening, they would more likely have spontaneous sexual thoughts. Women, only 20% to 30% of women have that what we call spontaneous sexual desire. So the majority of women are really only going to be having sexual desire as a response to like touch or sexual activity. So with that in mind, if you initiate touch and start being intimate, like just if you just start, then you and you try to get in the mood and you try to get aroused, then I think that that's really the best strategy. There's no expectation that before you are together, that when you get into bed, there's no expectation that you should already be in the mood or that you should already be aroused. That is absolutely unrealistic. So I just want to make sure that's 100% clear. When you get into bed, my expectation is that you will not be in the mood as far as aroused or having sexual desire at all, but rather you would be motivated to engage in intimacy because you want to get aroused or because you want to be together, okay? So then you work on getting aroused and you work on pleasure, you work on connecting. Now, what I think is not healthy is if you get into bed and you're not in the mood, which is normal, but instead you say to yourself, well, I'm not going to get aroused tonight. Like, nothing's going to happen for me. So let's just have sex quickly because I know this isn't going to work for me. So that's what we would refer to as like pity sex or duty sex, something like that. And that is not healthy for you or for your partner. So the reason that's not healthy for the person who's doing the pity sex, they start to associate sex with some kind of like a chore that they're doing for somebody else. And that's really, really not a good connection in their mind to be making. And for the partner, it actually is really bad as well because they're oftentimes very dissatisfied with the quality of sex and they often feel very conflicted. Like they don't really want to have sex with somebody who doesn't want to have sex with them, but then they're doing it anyways. So that leaves a very uncomfortable feeling for the partner. So I just want to make sure that this is perfectly clear to everyone. When you get into bed and you have decided like tonight is a good night for intimacy or tonight is mikvah night or, you know, one of you is interested and the other one is not yet, I have no expectation that you should already be aroused or you should already have desire. Instead, you should, you know, in it, you should engage in touch and you should go slowly and try to get aroused and try to have a pleasant, pleasurable experience. That's really what I recommend. Okay. And yes, I absolutely think you need to try to quote unquote make it happen, meaning the intimacy. And I think you need to do that because if you're waiting for you to feel spontaneous sexual desire, you could be waiting a very long time. And that's, and I don't think long periods of between sex is usually very good for the relationship. Okay. Section 3 is on planning and making it happen. So do you think it's a good idea to schedule times to be intimate or should it just happen naturally? How should, okay. And like people are asking a lot of those same kinds of questions here about planning it out. Let's see. So I definitely think planning intimacy is a great strategy. I don't think you should let it happen naturally, especially when you have children. I think that the chances of spontaneous sexual drive is much lower, and even for men. So, especially because of stress. So instead, you should set some times aside, maybe Shabbos, holidays, you know, maybe once or twice a week, and mikveh night. You know, you can, these are times you can try. And again, you're getting into bed and you're trying to engage in intimacy. You're trying to engage in pleasure. You're trying to touch each other in a way that feels good. You're trying to enjoy yourself. You're trying to connect. You're trying to get aroused. That's the point. You're not already in the mood. And you know what? Sometimes it might not happen. Sometimes it might not happen that you just are not able to get there. And I think, you know, sometimes it's okay to retreat and to, say like, you know what? I'm really sorry. This is really not working tonight. That is okay. So, you know, sometimes you can try and see how it goes. And it's also okay to retreat and to, you know, have a different ending for that night. That is perfectly healthy. You're not committing to something. When you get into bed, you're not committing. Yes, you know, if I hug you, I'm agreeing to having sex. That's not, That's going to be too much pressure. Even when we plan it out, something distracting usually happens to make intimacy next to impossible. What can we do to make it actually happen? I'm not really sure what this person is referring to that happens that's distracting. It could be that this person has a really hard time relaxing. So if that's what they're talking about, that they have like distracting thoughts, maybe, if that's what they're talking about, then I think they should work really harder on trying to relax before intimacy. That is a very important skill. So that might mean like taking a shower, a long hot shower beforehand, or like stretching or yoga or reading, or maybe a long like back rub or something. I think this person might need more relaxation. Sometimes I feel like everything has to be absolutely perfect before we can be intimate. Many of these things are out of my control, and some are in my control, like as far as house chores. It's very hard to do everything just to even hope for it to happen. What can I do to make it actually happen? And it sounds like this person or their spouse feels that there has to be a lot of criteria met in order to relax. Basically, that's what I'm hearing. I hear that this person is a little bit anxious and they need the probably the house to be cleaned, and they need, quality time, and they need a back rub, and they need new, clean sheets, and they need, and I hear this all the time. I think this person is a little bit anxious, and I think that what they should focus on is like, what do I need in order to be more relaxed? I think that a bigger buffer time is probably a good idea, giving yourself more time, not trying to do everything that night. Maybe if you're trying to be intimate that night, it's not a good idea to also tackle the laundry and also tackle cleaning the bathrooms and also, doing the bills. Maybe if intimacy is sort of like something that's important to you that night, maybe that's not a good night to also tackle all these other things. And maybe you should leave those things to another night. And focus on using that time to work on relaxation. Okay. The next topic is prescribed times for intimacy. So Mikva and I can feel like a hard switch between being Anita, where it's bad to even touch your spouse accidentally, to being intimate. So, what are some ways to deal with this? Yes, absolutely. Tons of people feel the same way, that it is a tough transition. So many people do not end up having, sex on mikveh night. And I think that you should talk to your spouse about how this is really hard. And I think there absolutely can be an emotional transition. I think that during the Sheva Nikkiyam, you are, looking forward to, you're counting up, you are counting day one, day two, you are looking forward to being together again. And then on the day of mikveh night, you are doing your preparations. Now remember, a very important component of sitting there and doing your mikveh preparations are that now you're focusing on yourself and you're focusing on looking forward to what is to come. A lot of people get so they get so bogged down in the details of the chatzitzas that they forget what is the whole point here. The whole point is that you are sitting, getting yourself ready, you're preparing yourself, you're looking forward to the mikvah, focusing on what is to come, I mean, emotionally and mentally, that's what you should be focusing on, not obsessing about your cuticles. So during the Shavasana and throughout the process of getting ready for the mikvah, that's time that you're mentally and emotionally preparing for later. So it's not like, you're doing all these things unrelated to intimacy, and then all of a sudden you come home and it's this sudden shock. Also during the Shavasana, you can also be talking, in an appropriate way, but you could talk about how much you're looking forward to being together again, and you're looking forward to mikvah night, and you want, you want to be with your spouse. I know there are different opinions about what you can, I know that there are different opinions about sort of what you maybe should say or not, but I think that it is fully appropriate for you to say how much you're looking forward to being with each other and to keep that emotional intimacy alive during that time. And that will help you anticipate and look forward to being together. And then when you come back from the mikveh, I think that you probably need a little bit of a physical buffer too. Maybe you need to just like hold hands or lay down together for a while. Maybe you need to have, 45 minutes of just hugging or just, laying in bed together. Maybe it can't be like jumping in right away. And for some people, like I said, they just are not able to transition to sex that night. And, that might be ne the next night. That is very common. Okay. So with the many halachas in place regarding what are some tips to avoid making sex feel prescribed so that we can engage in it properly without compromising the overall quality? I mean, I think that these rules are supposed to make it feel special and in its place. Just like how Shabbat, it has a lot of rules, you can also enjoy the experience, or all the Yomim Tovim as well. So I think you have to focus on what is important. Like, this is a connection between you and your spouse, and this is about pleasure, and this is about connecting, and this is about your feelings toward one another and your love and your affection. Like, that's what this is really about. So I don't think that this is. So I don't know. I hope that that answers this person's question. Okay. Somebody's asking, how does the concept of consent interact with maintenance sex? Okay, so sex should never feel like something that you're doing for the other person. Like I told you in the beginning, when you get into bed, there is no expectation that you should already have desire, that you should already have arousal. So if you're not feeling aroused or desire at that point, it's 100% normal. I have no expectation for you to feel that way. But you have the motivation that when you lay down next to each other, your body kind of remembers, oh yeah, it is nice to be close to this person. Oh yeah, I do like it when we're together. So that hopefully is jotting, your brain. That motivation can help you engage in hugging and kissing and that and the touching, and that hopefully will lead you to feeling pleasure and wanting more from that. So this idea, this person is saying maintenance sex. I don't relate to this idea at all. I don't think that this is something we should have in our minds as that feels like a chore, really. It feels like a chore. It feels like you have to clean the bathrooms once a week, and you have to clean, wash the sheets, And I think that I think you do sort of push yourself to, conjure up the energy to sort of begin. But I think that the goal is that once you get going, you enjoy yourself, you get into it, you have a good time, and it was worth it. That's really the goal. And if that's not happening for you, that's what somebody was asking in the beginning about when do you need to go to a sex therapist. If that sort of process is not happening, maybe go for a consultation. Or if you've been having pity sex for so long that you don't know how to enjoy yourself anymore, then maybe that's time to go to a professional. But sort of doing it just as a chore and saying to yourself or saying out loud, I'm not really into it tonight, so make it fast. Like, that is really not healthy. Okay. Building desire. This is section five. Me take a drink first. Okay. What are the ways to build desire and arousal throughout the day or overall so it's not just, okay, time to have sex now? I think that it's a nice idea. I'm not really sure how practical that actually is and whether people are actually going to do that. I think it's not a bad idea to sort of send, to communicate throughout the day or to sort of stay close and connected throughout the day. Like, I don't think that's a bad idea, but if you guys have kids and you have busy lives and you're working, realistically, I don't know that you're going to be able to build much desire and arousal throughout the day. And I think that it's, that's a great goal, but I don't know if it's like so realistic. So I don't want you to feel that that's really necessary or like the goal. But I think when you get into bed, you need to give yourself enough time so that it can build. I think when you're, before you get into bed, if you can work on getting yourself relaxed and getting yourself to just like generally feel like in a good mindset and in a good mood, I think that is a good strategy. I think just like working on your self-care and just making your mental health, good and you're feeling you kind of got yourself together. I think that is a good use of your time. And then when you get into bed, I think, giving yourself lots of time, like an hour, give yourself time to connect. What are healthy ways to initiate sex? What if one partner feels that they're usually the one to initiate? I think this is where the scheduling can be nice because then neither of you have to be the one and to sort of stick your necks out. So I think, if you sort of have an understanding that certain nights are goals, then I think, I think that then you could always say to your spouse, like, oh gosh, like, I know that we usually, get together, on Friday night, but I just have this terrible headache and I'm just really not feeling up for it. I'm really exhausted. So I think that you can do that and I think you should reschedule. And I think that it's good to have these sort of understood times. That way you know nobody has to initiate. It sort of puts the pressure off both of you. And then I think everyone has their own language or body language or facial cues or I think everyone has their own ways of doing it that work for them and the partner. So I think, you can also, I mean, I just think everyone has different codes, like Hey, how are you doing tonight? I think some people, I think you can sort of get a sense if the person says, oh my gosh, I had such a bad day. I'm like, I'm so tired. I'm just so done. You probably aren't going to be successful that night if that's what your partner is saying. But if they seem like they're kind of in an okay mood and they seem like things aren't so stressful for them that day, then maybe you can say, hey, like, what about if we went to bed early? Or, do you think you would wanna go to bed together earlier tonight or something? I mean, there's lots of different ways to say it. Okay. How can you re-experience or ignite the sort of excitement of going home with someone or being intimate with your partners for the first time again once being married? So, this person's talking about how they, when they were not married, there was more desire and it was more exciting. And I think that this person is asking, how do we get that again? And I think that really, I think it is not a realistic expectation at all. Between, when you were dating and when you are married, I think it's a completely different ball game. And I'm not just saying that I think that, I'm saying that that's what research shows. In fact, people's brains are completely different when they're in the first 6 months of their relationship versus when people are after the 6 months point of their relationship. In the first 6 months of your relationship, your brains are very illuminated, and when they did brain scans, this is according to the research of Helen Fisher, when they did brain scans of people in the first 6 months of their relationship, people were had the same brain activity as people taking cocaine. So you might remember that when you were, first in the relationship, you might have been like obsessed with the person. You could stay up all night talking. You couldn't stop thinking about the person. Sex felt amazing. These are very common in the first 6 months of the relationship. And as you get into the 6 months mark, your brain relaxes. And it's sort of, it relaxes because it's in the attachment phase now, and the brain thinks, okay, phew, now that I've caught this person, now I can relax, now we're secure, now we're going to be together. So your brain can relax, and there's a lot of really nice things about being in a relaxed brain state. So I really think that it's a beautiful time, and we don't want to go back to the time when our brains were so anxious. So you have to figure out how to have functional, attaching, committed, satisfying sex. And it's totally unlike the sex in the beginning, or the sex when you were single, or the sex when you were a BT and, you were with other people, or the sex when you were with, whatever these other situations were. So I think you have to change your expectations and know that marital sex looks different, and it's going to come from a deeper love and a deeper attachment, and you can truly, truly have deeper, more connecting, more intimate, more pleasurable, more orgasmic experiences the longer that you're together. Absolutely. That is absolutely possible. And if that is not your reality and sex has just gone downhill, again, that might be a good opportunity for you to see a specialist who can help you, because something is not computing. Something is not connecting right. Okay. Spicing things up. That's section six. So, how do you spice things up so you're not always doing the same thing? What are halakhically acceptable ways to spice things up? Advice to keep sex from being routine. I think that I truly, truly believe that you have everything you need. All the tools that you need to have an amazing sex life, you already have. You don't need anything outside. You don't need you don't necessarily need anything else. And by else, I mean toys and this and that. And I think you have everything you need. I think when you really feel comfortable with the other person and you really feel comfortable with your sexuality and the other person feels really comfortable with their sexuality, you can connect your erotic cells together and get to deeper and deeper places of erotic connection together. And I don't think that that is going to happen through buying this and buying that and trying this and trying that. I think it will come from within. And a lot of people say like they don't like it when their spouse does this. They don't like this type of touch. They don't like this type of touch. They don't like to give it this way. They don't like to give it that way. They don't like this position. I think that if you could feel more comfortable in your body and in your sexual self, and if your partner feels comfortable in their body and in their sexual self, I think you can reach inside of you and find that place that wants to give to your partner on a deep level and who wants to give them pleasure and vice versa. I think you can really experiment with everything you have, which is, all your body parts, all your skin, all your, your arms, your legs, your hands, your mouths. I think you can really do a lot. And I don't think that there needs to be a dull moment. I don't think you need things from the outside. I think it's about tapping into that inner spirituality, the inner sexuality, the inner confidence and connection to yourself. And also connecting your fantasy, that you can connect on that level. This is a little bit abstract, everything I'm saying. I don't think that it's always easy for people, but the path toward this is to remember that the answers are inside of yourselves. And the answers are in feeling more and more safe, comfortable, and secure with yourself and with your partner. If you can be 100% yourself and you can be 100% comfortable and safe and connected and secure in this relationship and you don't feel judged, and you don't feel like the other person is, judging you and I think then you can reach that deeper level. Okay. So I think you can really, I think that you certainly can play around with different types of touch, different pressure, different lightness, and with a light touch, with a harder touch, with a faster touch, with a softer touch, with different types of textures, with different types of temperatures, with, I mean, there's just so much that you have within yourself. Okay, the next section is female issues. So, is it typical that the husband often climaxes first? What happens if it's usually the wife? Can her experience be prolonged so that her husband and wife can climax together? I mean, I think that some of these things are like from the movies. I mean, this climaxing together thing, like, okay, that's great if that happens sometimes, but this is not fully in your control. So I think that we can let go of that expectation. And I think that sometimes when men orgasm first, they become very tired or they're kind of done with the sexual experience. Not always, but sometimes that happens. And if that happens for you, where you notice that your husband is climaxing and then afterwards he's sort of done and like it's kind of it almost ends and his energy level's a lot less, then maybe it's a good idea if you would try to orgasm first, if that's something that you can sort of work on as far as the timing. So I think that is probably a good sort of timeline to sort of think about taking care of, like pleasuring her first, and then he can go next, unless it works better for you for him to climax first and then taking care of her needs. But whatever it might be, I think both are fine, and you just have to figure out how both people can feel connected and pleasure and together. And you don't necessarily need to worry about being together on this at the same time. The person's asking, can her experience be prolonged so that they can climax together? I mean, I think you're gonna have to play around with the how many multiple orgasms she can have, and the timing is so much to this question that it's hard for me to know with and so little information. This person is writing, I don't really know how to explore my own body to find out what works. I'm possibly embarrassed in front of myself, let alone my husband. Right, this is what I'm talking about, is that we have to connect to ourselves, and then we connect ourselves to our partners. So that's sort of a two-step process, right? So I would encourage this person to get to know their body. There is nothing wrong with that. Look at themselves, touch themselves, figure out what is happening with their body, what feels good. If they are feeling embarrassed, I think, I don't know if they're embarrassed like about their body image or their weight or if they're embarrassed about something in particular. But I think also sharing these very vulnerable feelings is a really necessary component of intimacy. So feel female orgasm. This person feels like it's impossible. There are peaks, but is that it? How would we know? How do we get there? I think there are some great, really great books that I don't really have enough time today to sort of go into this issue, and it's a very common issue, but there's some really excellent books. So I would encourage this person to read Come As You Are and She Comes First and Becoming Orgasmic, and For Yourself. Those are some kind of classics on this issue. Also, just a note about female orgasm. It is considered like the lack of female orgasm is considered a psychological disorder. And the reason I say that is because it's important to remember how much mentally is at play. So the lack of orgasm is really equated to the lack of to feeling that it's not safe to let go of control. So it's usually something has to do with being in control, having a difficult ability to let go of control, and relax and really let go of yourself, and that's sort of somewhere you could go with that. So, what are some recommendations for women who are constantly thinking about everything getting done in the house, work, kids? It's hard to turn off her brain and get into the mood. Absolutely. Incredibly common. So that's incredibly common. I think that for this person, it's sort of like what we talked about before, that they need to create like a buffer between like all the stuff that they're doing, work, kids, packing lunches, like, emails, and, shut that all off for the evening. I'm saying I know that you can't always put off everything, but for that evening, shut that off. And that's one of the things that's so nice about Shabbos, because you had this very long break from, I mean, as the break meaning like lighting candles, and then like you get to sort of relax for a few minutes, and then you have like a kind of like relaxing meal, hopefully, and then you kind of have like a slower evening. You don't have to do any housework, really. You don't have to do chores. You don't have to pack lunches. You're not on your phone. You're not on your computer, and nobody's working. So there's like a nice, like slower pace, not to mention the candlelight. Like there's some nice aspects that can be very positive for a person like this. And on a night that's not Shabbos, you can set yourself aside, like shut everything off, take your hot shower. Just like spend some alone time, just, get ready for bed in like a calm, soothing way. Get into bed and just see, maybe you could read or look at a magazine or something, some calming activity, listen to music. These are some things that might help you buffer between your everyday life and the hecticness and then the intimacy. And then another thing would be like meditation. So during that time, if you have a hard time relaxing, I would recommend during that time to use one of those like meditation apps like Headspace and Simple Habit, those type of apps. They're free. And you can say like, I want a 5 minute meditation, or I'm in a 10 minute meditation, or I want a de-stressor meditation. And you can click on that, and they will help you relax. Okay. How do you balance wanting to give to your husband versus forcing yourself to have sex when you're not in the mood? I want to make my husband happy, but I also always feel less connected after we have sex when I'm not into it. Okay, so right. So this person needs to follow my advice when it comes to you get into bed and you make your efforts, you do your buffer, you do your individual work. You need to do your individual work. You do your shower, you do your music, you do your meditation app, you do what you need to do to get yourself to a neutral place. Not to get yourself to an aroused place, get yourself to a neutral place. You do that work. That is not your partner's job. Then you get into bed and you decide for yourself, okay, I'm going to invest here. I'm going to invest myself and in this relationship, and I'm going to try to enjoy myself. I'm going to try to get connected and feel relaxed and feel pleasure and get in the mood. That is what you're working on. And like I'm hearing this person that they do not feel good afterwards if they were not aroused and into it. So then maybe that might be the type of night where it might be better for everyone if you did, say, I'm sorry, it's really not happening for me tonight. It's really not working. Rather than going ahead and having sex and then feeling awful afterwards, that's not good for either of you. Is it normal for sex penetration to hurt, even with lots of lubricant? Is this an issue when one would go to a sex therapist? Thank you for asking this question. It is common. It is not normal. It is not okay. So it should not hurt. It should not hurt. There is a lot we can do. Please contact somebody like me, like my practice. I have excellent doctors that I work with. You absolutely need to figure out what is going on here. There are so many things that could be happening. It could be muscle clenching, pelvic floor dysfunction, spasms, could be nerve issues, could be, and some of these things, I mean, you don't want to live like this forever. You want to see how you can solve these problems. And there are real treatments out there, real treatments. So see a specialist, contact me or somebody like me or a sexual pain expert. And, really, you need to go for an eval and figure out what is behind the pain. And yes, this is exactly the type of patient that I would see where we would get to the bottom of what exactly is happening here. So, like I said, it is common. It happens in about 10% of women. It is not normal and it is not okay. Male issues. It can also be hormone related issues. So we would explore, what's happening with the hormones, what's happening with medications, things like that. Okay. Male issues. Can you address premature ejaculation? How is it defined? How would you work with that issue? And this person is asking about that some of the therapies for premature ejaculation are considered USR. So what are the things that you can do to address this issue? So premature ejaculation is defined as ejaculating in less than 2 minutes, and 2 to 5 minutes is considered normal, just FYI. So the way that you would work on this in with a couple, so that it would be halakhically fine, would be sort of you kind of imagine like a thermometer, like an old-fashioned thermometer, with like a red line, that goes up to 100. So what happens is that you want to help train, the therapist would help train the man that, maybe he would have half penetration or a little bit penetration, and he would be visualizing the thermometer, and he would be visualizing the number going up, but then he would be breathing and he would be like looking and watching the thermometer like go down. And without moving, without any physical moving. So you kind of like move very, you just go a little bit in and then that's it. You don't move at all. And then you do this sort of thermometer like approach and then you breathe and then you go a little bit more and then you do imagine the thermometer and then you move the thermometer down. It's like a whole technique. It's called like start stop technique. But you typically you would have used it with masturbation, but you can do this with sex. So you can totally mimic it with intercourse. There's no problem with that. And it's called start stop technique. And yes, a sex therapist could help you figure out how to do that. Okay. We're almost out of time, and I have a few more questions to answer. So practical issues, section 9. So how are we supposed to keep the sheets covered during sex? I think there are different opinions, but I think that, maybe just focusing on at the point of ejaculation. And this person is asking about the mess of having sex seems to outweigh the enjoyment of it. So I think you definitely need to lay down a towel, a sex towel, a big bath towel that is designated for sex. And I think this person really needs to think about like what is aversive about that, what is icky to them. Like I think this person needs to grow into the sexuality a little bit more. They need to embrace that sex is messy and, There's fluids, and that's part of the fun of it. So I think that this might be something the person has struggled with for a long time, or maybe this person is new at this. But if this is continues to be an issue, definitely this is the type of thing a sex therapist can help you with, just sort of get over like that aversion. You can use a black panty liner. That's another idea, but I think it's really psychological, right? So what's the best sex positions and advice during pregnancy? I think that, woman on top would be more comfortable. On all fours is more comfortable. Those are some ideas. Like a side by side type of thing, like a spooning position is also possible. Man on top is usually not as comfortable. Luckily, what times of day and all this is when allowed to be together. I really try not to, speak about these type of issues like halachic, because it's really, something I think there's a lot of different of opinions, and I don't, it's just really not my place. So please talk to your kala teacher, talk to your rav, if you need clarity on that. But I just feel like my role is really just to talk about, like, from a therapist type of perspective, or other than halachic in this talk. I am a kala teacher, so I would be happy to speak to, I do speak to people about halakhic issues, but it's more one-on-one. Okay, and then how do you handle changes in your sex life when pregnant, as you have children? Absolutely. I mean, things ebb and flow, and certainly postpartum is not a good time. Your hormone levels are awful, and you have significant reduction of estrogen and testosterone in your body. You probably would find it difficult to get aroused. You would probably have decreased desire, more vaginal dryness, more fatigue. So postpartum is really hard. So be compassionate on yourself and understanding. And then, for some people, pregnancy is a great time because your hormones are fantastic for sex. You have huge rises of estrogen especially. But for other people, they have, ailments, the ails of pregnancy that outweigh the benefits, the backache and the nausea and the fatigue. So I think you have to just be understanding of yourself and compassionate, and just try to keep intimacy regular in your life, through these ups and downs of the life cycle, within reason, but also understanding. And talking to your spouse about what's difficult. Like, I think a man might not necessarily experience, or probably wouldn't experience, the same ups and downs of a menstrual cycle, of a monthly cycle, of a pregnancy, of a postpartum. So I think, or menopause for that, for that. So I think men are just, they don't understand. So I think explaining, like, hormone changes and how you feel and what's happened, and try encouraging them not to, not the, for them not to take it personally, that there are these real changes to your body. So this person, this is section 10, and then there's section 11. We're almost done. Okay, so before I was married, I used to have fantasies and desires. Now that I'm married, sex doesn't feel as good as I had imagined, and I don't really have anything to fantasize about anymore. And then this person, similarly, is writing, like, when we were dating or engaged, the tension between us was palpable. In our marriage, we express a lot of physical affection. When it comes in more sexual touching, I don't feel as aroused as I did before marriage. So, Again, these people need to remember that there is a significant altered brain state when you were dating or recently married. And that is evidence in proof. I think the book is called Why We Love by Helen Fisher. She's a neurologist or neuropsychologist. And not a neurologist, I think a neuropsychologist. I think that it's really, I think it can really help you normalize. Your brain is not the same. You will not feel the same as when you were craving to be with the person. It is different. And like I said, I hope that people can learn how to appreciate the real connection and intimacy and attachment that can happen in a committed and loving and safe and secure marriage that you wouldn't get in the anxious mind, in that anxious brain state, because you will not get that same level. And you will probably, there is reason to believe that you would be more orgasmic in the committed marriage than you would be in the dating relationship. Women notoriously have better orgasms in their 30s and 40s than they do when they're younger, and that is when women are in their committed relationships and marriages. So there is so much hope here. So I think it's just about changing expectations and not feeling disappointed that you don't have that spontaneous desire, but instead working at it, working on the pleasure, working at the arousal, and exploring different types of touch and pleasure that you absolutely can feel now and throughout your old age. That won't change. So another person is writing like that they're comparing the sex that they're having in their marriage to sex that they had with other partners before marriage. So again, I think you cannot compare because you have this marriage relationship, which is totally different than a dating or a not at that level of commitment relationship. And the commitment makes your brain relax. And the brain relaxing makes it not as much have as much sexual desire. So that's what's happening there. Okay. So that's the majority of the questions. There are some more questions, but I think that mostly I have covered most of it. I hope that that was helpful, and feel free to contact me if you need more information or if you want a consultation. No commitment, of course. It's not like you have to sign up for any specific amount of time or anything. I have multiple therapists that work in my practice. We work 6 days a week and evenings as well. And right now we're doing teletherapy. And then we also have a practice in New Jersey. So we also can, see people in New Jersey as well as here in Maryland. And then I am doing a seminar, a webinar, rather, a webinar on, let's see, when is it? It is June 4th. If you go to my Facebook page, Rivka Sidorsky, and Associates, I guess that's my Facebook page, then you can see my webinar. And then I'm going to be talking more in depth about dealing with stress affecting sexuality and like differences in desire, and exacerbating differences in desire. And that webinar is gonna be on June 4th at 8 o'clock. So you can find more information on that through my Facebook page, or you can email me. Okay, I hope that that was helpful for everyone. Good night.